You're listening to Upon Further Review on the Raiders Podcast Network. Here's your host, Eddie Pascal.
Raider Nation, we are back. Back from the ATL, baby. Live and in color at Radio Row, just across the street from the State Farm Arena. Eddie Pascal and producer Trav with another episode of Upon Further Review. And this one, this episode, I'm feeling good about, Travis. I feel strong to very strong. How do you feel?
Also strong to very strong.
Strong to very strong.
Like I said, this whole week, going to be a lot of good stuff.
And it keeps going. So today, just off the top, we have Akbar Bajabiamia, former Raider, current host of American Ninja Warrior, and about 37 other programs out on your television. And we also catch up with Daniel Jacobs, the guy who's going to be challenging Canelo Alvarez in a couple months out in Las Vegas. Both really fun conversations. Daniel in particular was good enough to let me live out a childhood dream, so we appreciate him greatly for that. But before we get into all that, been another busy day. Another busy day here on Radio Row. Things picking up, the volume, the fervor, the energy, the feeling growing. Literally by the hour. We came and we're recording this at, well, let's call it 5 o'clock. 5 o'clock or so East Coast time, and it's been crazy to watch. Today's Wednesday. From this morning when we got here, 8:30, to now, just it seems like every 5 minutes there's another person rolling around. There's someone else. Some of the big dogs are coming out to eat now. Now that we're getting a little later in the week, such Rich Eisen rolling around from the NFL Network. Who else did we see, Trev? Anyone of note rolling around the streets?
Juju.
We saw Juju Smith-Schuster doing his thing. So the big names are coming out. And it's been a lot of fun to see, man. And also, I have to give credit to our guy Marcus, who once again running around doing a million things. But the backdrop that we brought has created so much conversation with people. We had a very nice man come up to us earlier, works for KTLA, he's one of their field producers, came up and says, guys, can I take a picture with the backdrop? And we said, of course, absolutely. So anyone out there, if you happen upon us in Radio Row, we're at table number 69 across from the Fox Radio setup, and just on the other side of our friends the Buffalo Bills, come holler at us. We'll let you take a picture with the backdrop, and people love it, man. It's been it's an obnoxiously sized backdrop, but in a good way. It's big, lets people know that we're here, and it's a great talking point. It really is. But moving on, Akbar, who is actually, me and Trav were joking earlier, the first ever guest on this very podcast in what seems like an eternity ago, but really was about 6 months ago, was the first ever guest on this podcast, and now he's back. Our paths have crossed again at Atlanta in the ATL. Akbar, obviously, a very busy man. It was good enough to give us a couple minutes, and Akbar is just pure energy all the time, 24/7, an incredibly entertaining guy. You guys have seen him on TV. So I guess, really, without any further ado, here's our conversation with Akbar Bajabiamia. And our on-location Upon Further Review series carries on. And we are very excited. We welcome in the host of American Ninja Warrior, American Ninja Warrior Jr., Fantasy Live on NFL Network.
Yes.
And
yes,
if you remember, the very, very, very first guest we had on this show back in training camp.
Yep.
Akbar Bajabiamia. So Akbar.
What's up,
thank
brother?
Thank you.
How you doing, man?
Thank you. Thank you for a couple of minutes,
yes,
man. So I got to ask you, first
yep
off, you've been doing the rounds, right?
Yep.
What's the most creative pronunciation of your name that you've seen today?
Today was Baja, and I think a lot of people associate me with California. I mean,
sure,
obviously, you know, went to high school in L.A., went to, you know, Crenshaw High School, San Diego State, Oakland Raiders. So people, I've been in California my whole life, and now, you know, in the entertainment in L.A., so people automatically, like, think Baja, California. So the first thing is Baja. Baja Bajabiamia, Baja. I was like, I'll give it to you.
How'd I do? Did I do okay?
No, you did amazing. You're
okay.
Baja. Oh, yeah, yeah. You're
okay
in the family. You're in the
good
family.
Good.
Yeah,
I just want to make sure.
That's easy for you. Yeah.
Well, first off, man, congrats on all your success. American
thank
Ninja Warrior,
you,
an awesome show. And I was talking to my fiance to say we're going to have you on today.
Yeah.
And she watches the show. We all watch the show. But it's one of those kind of unique shows on today where it's for everyone, right?
Yeah,
I watch it,
it,
you watch it, produce it, like Trav watches it, kids watch it,
yeah,
grandma watches
yeah
it. You don't, there's not that many out there anymore that kind of hit all those demos.
Yeah, you know, it's crazy because, you know, American Ninja Warrior is now going on its 11th season.
Crazy.
And so we're getting ready to fire back up after the Super Bowl, but it's in May, so we still got a little bit of time, but we'll start back up in May. And for me, I've been with the show now for 7 seasons, and it's incredible because it's kind of been like an institution of TV of the TV world. I mean, people kind of relate to the show. And I think it's different from playing professional sports or watching professional sports, where some of the athletes are being held as, you know, bigger than life superstars, and so it may not be relatable to the common person. Whereas when you watch American Ninja Warrior, these athletes are relatable because they're your bankers, they're your school teacher, your firefighters. They're people who've overcome extraordinary circumstances, albeit cancer or an amputee competing on the show. Or maybe it's your grandpa. We've had a 77-year-old compete on the show. So it's for everyone. And then the storytelling, too. When you watch the storytelling, you realize that we're all more alike than we're not.
What's the biggest difference you think you've seen? You said this is year seven for your season seven. What's the biggest difference from when you started to where we're at right now?
Well, I think that the course has gotten harder. There are more ninja gyms popping up all around the country. And so the athletes, they've gotten better. And so we've actually had to elevate it. I mean, I don't know, like, even coming into season 11, I don't know what it's going to look like this year, because we've raised the wall up to 14.5 feet. We've done stuff that usually is reserved for Las Vegas, which is our finals, like our Super Bowl. We've actually brought it into some of the city qualifying and finals, because the athletes train every day, 24/7. You know, when we had our first winner in season 7, he won $1 million. I mean, the dude literally walked off with $1 million for all the training and all the hard work. Now, it's considered the hardest obstacle course in the world because of that, but we've had to step our game up. I think that's the biggest thing. And then I feel like I've grown, too. You know, I just remember my very first day, and I talk about this in my new book, Everyone Can Be a Ninja, that comes out in May. I talk about my very first day on the job and just how much different it was doing entertainment TV than sports TV, and how nervous I was. And it takes me back to the nerves that I had playing in my first NFL game. So it's a different skill set.
I find it very hard to believe that you've been nervous for 1 second your entire life.
What? Oh, my goodness. Well, shoot, I just experienced some incredible nerves because I just competed last year on the show for the first time. You can check it out on YouTube. But I competed, and I had to rip off my shirt, and I yelled, but not because I was trying to look cool, but I was trying to hide the amount of my chest was, like, so tight. I was, like, so nervous. I couldn't control myself, because I say, if I fail, I'm going to lose all credibility. Like, how are you going to tell us what to do in the commentary?
And you can't even do it.
So I was nervous. I say, one slip up, because all it is like, one slip up. But then I went back into, like, my pro mode, where I was like, okay, I got to complete this. And I did.
So you obviously, we love having you on. You're one of our favorites. You've done this
a couple times now.
And we love talking to you for numerous reasons. Yeah. But one, we got to talk a little Silver and Black.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's talk
about
it.
So last year.
Hey, you see what
I know.
I'm wearing.
He came dressed for the part.
Yeah, you see I'm wearing my Silver and Black.
And I know this wasn't an accident. No, deep down.
Yeah, I wear Silver and Black all the time.
So last year, kind of up and down season, right?
Yeah,
obviously, the results not
there.
It was a bad season. They're not there.
Yeah. No,
but when
okay.
you look at this team now, headed into year two, John Gruden, Derek Carr, that whole marriage and institution. I mean, what's your kind of state of the Raiders?
I think the state of the Raiders is that we're developing. We are growing. And it's okay. Like, you have to experience. Again, I talk about this in my book, Everyone Can Be a Ninja, about accepting failure. So many times that, you know, especially we want success to happen right away. Well, you know what? You look at the dynasty that is the New England Patriots. They had so much failure prior to this 20-year run of just greatness. They were struggling. And I think you're going to see the same thing with the Raiders. I mean, the Raiders had the decades where we dominated. And I think we've gone through, 17, 15 years or whatever it is of bad times. But it's okay. It really is okay, because I think we're going to come back on the other side stronger. Now, I think about John Gruden and what that means. A lot of people say, oh, well, I know that there's a lot of hype behind John Gruden. Look, it's okay. He's out of shape. He's hasn't coached in, a decade?
Yeah.
I mean, it's not unreasonable to think that, you know, this year didn't go the way he wanted to. But I can tell you one thing. He's obviously flexed the fact that he can will and deal. Because the fact you look at this year, in the next 2 years, you get 5 draft picks, if I'm not mistaken, 3 this year. Can you imagine the type of positioning that you can get and the type of picks? Just think about what Ezekiel Elliott has meant for the Dallas Cowboys. Think about what a guy like who else is another first-round draft pick?
Saquon Barkley. Yeah,
Barkley. And think about what he means for the new New York Jets. And think if you can get 3 of those. And let's say one of them don't work out. I think you can get 2 of those. And let's say one of those don't work out. And you get one of them. I mean, you know, so you've secured and you can go out there. And, you know, it's interesting, too, bringing in, you know, Mike Mayock as a general manager.
NFL Network guy.
Yeah, I've worked with Mike Mayock for a long time. And, look, I was surprised at the pick. I was like, wow, Mike Mayock? But then I started thinking about it. Like, John Gruden is doing something that is, he's kind of doing his own thing, yeah. which is kind of cool. You think about it. Like,
which is also the epitome of being a Raider, right?
It's being an
no
only,
blueprint. There's just no blueprint. Doing it.
He studies film, and he studied personnel like nobody else yeah. in the business, hands down. Like, you can pull out a random name, and he can go dot, 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 dot. I mean, he can give it to you. So he understands football. He understands personnel, and he understands how it fits within a scheme. So I think that those two working together could be great.
Now, I'm curious, too, just as a former player, yeah. we hear all the time about the relationship between the quarterback and the head coach
yep.
and what that means, you know, from year one to year two. And you
yep.
see that jump from year one to year
yep.
two. But for an entire roster of guys yeah. who were being asked to do something completely new last year with Coach Gruden and his staff,
yeah.
I mean, how beneficial is it year two going to be for them? Same verbiage, same guys. The coaching staff is
yep.
you know 99% still intact. What's that continuity going to do for that whole roster going
well, the
into
continuity is going to be based on a couple of things. One is that there is going to have to be a little bit of bend, and I don't usually say this about leadership out of John Gruden, mm-hmm. and that obviously he's going to have a lot of his old school ways and the stuff that he used to do, but the generation has changed since he's – I mean, it's one thing if you've been out of business 2 or 3 years, but the generation has completely changed. Hell, their attention span
yeah.
is way different than what it was prior to, and it's even affecting the sports world and how people consume content and how people consume plays and the way. So he's going to have to make some adjustment. But I think also, too, the players. But the more they become more familiar with the guy, the easier it is going to be adapt. I mean, I'm sure John was trying to figure things out in his first year, and guys are going to be used to like, okay, I get John. I get his intent. Because if you don't understand a guy's intent, it's going to be very hard to trust. And I think they'll understand his intent. Like, okay, he came in essentially as a celebrity. I mean, John Gruden's a freaking rock star.
Yeah.
I mean, he's a rock star. I mean, my goodness. I mean, you know, he's the voice of Monday Night Football. He's been a big character forever. He's got 100 commercials out there. And so, yeah, I'm pretty sure there's that little, wow, man, this is a superstar. Can I talk to him? Can I approach him? Do I ask him for his autograph? I'm sure somebody on the team is asking
oh,
for
I'm
an
sure.
autograph.
I'm
you
sure.
Know, so,
for a mom or a cousin.
Yeah, right.
It's hanging in the man cave right now.
Hey, Coach, can you sign this? But now that he's broken through that, he's back in the groove. And look, he's invited me out to camp. I was at training camp.
Yep.
And so it's great. I mean, I'm all in on John Gruden. I think the 10-year commitment to John Gruden and what Mark Davis has done bringing him back into the fold, I promise you it will pay benefits. I'm not saying it because I'm a former Silver and Black. I work for the NFL Network. I can say what the heck I want. And I'm telling you, I truly believe in the Silver and Black and their resurrection.
Akbar Baja Biamia. I messed it up that time.
Yeah, Baja Biamia.
Baja
Biamia
is our guest here on Radio Row. And Akbar, we appreciate your time, but I'll get you out of here on this.
Yeah.
I don't know if you know if you remember, but a couple years ago when we were in Santa Clara and you came on, we were talking, and you gave a speech to the Raider Nation.
Mm-hmm.
It was essentially like a pregame huddle speech.
Yep.
And you said it was something along the lines of, you know, we're going to be back. This team is headed on the right track. And I don't want to say you called anything, but we went to the postseason.
I remember that. That
yes.
was the year. And then, and obviously after that, we were hoping to get build a little bit of that same
yes.
success. And then we had the injury. But I do remember that. And
it was
that,
an incredible speech. Yes. Still, to this day,
yes.
one of the most trafficked videos on Raiders.com.
Are you serious?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh,
nice.
It was a good
okay.
video.
Okay.
It was great.
All right, yeah.
So
yeah.
I'm going to see, can we replicate success? Can you look into the camera? Can you explain to Raider Nation why you said it? You believe in John Gruden. You believe in the marriage between him and Mayock. If you're a Raider fan out there, you were kind of sad last year. It was a bummer.
Yeah.
Why should you be happy? Why should you be excited headed into 2019 and beyond?
You know what? I don't know if I could pull anything out this early, but I will say this
yes.
to the Oakland Raiders. This is something a former Raider told me, one of my teammates, Roland Williams. To be good is not good enough if you dream of being great. I'm going to say it again. To be good is not good enough if you dream of being great. And I'm telling you right now, life's battles don't always go to the strongest or fastest man, but the man who wins is the man who thinks he can. And I believe that this is a team that thinks they can win with the right leadership in John Gruden.
I love it. That works for me. I'm ready to go do the ninja course now.
All right, let's go
do it.
Do it.
All right, brother, we appreciate your time,
man,
and we'll catch you up to
you
in Napa.
You got to make sure you pre-order my book. Don't
yes,
forget.
Yes, I will.
Everyone can be a ninja. All right.
When's it come out again?
May 7th, and it's on pre-order right now on Amazon and Barnes & Noble.
Boom. You heard the man. Go buy the book.
All right.
Appreciate
Thanks
you, brother.
Thanks,
man.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
Man, I was serious with Akbar, though. I mean, getting that pump-up speech. I mean, I'm ready to go do the Ninja Warrior course. I don't know how I would fare. I think I'd do okay. I think I could dude, I don't know if I would get through it. I'm going to say I would make it 55% of the way through. I think I would cross the halfway point. I think I would get into the second half. But I think the fatigue is what would get me. I really do. But big thank you to Akbar. We appreciate his time. Like we said, the first ever guest on this humble podcast of ours. But big thanks to Akbar for giving us a few. But we move on now to our second guest of the afternoon, evening, wherever, I guess depending on where you're listening from. But, man, a dude with a crazy story, Daniel Jacobs, who, like I said earlier, is going to be taking on Canelo Alvarez in early May out there in Las Vegas at the T-Mobile Arena, home of the Golden Knights. And I'm a bit of – I wouldn't say I'm a boxing nerd. I'm definitely a boxing fan. I'm not one of those guys who lives and breathes with, oh, you know, this guy won or that guy won. But I enjoy boxing. I think it's a great sport. I like watching. I think it's a bit of a lost art right now, but I'm hoping it comes back. But anyways, Daniel Jacobs, like I said, taking on Canelo in a couple months. But outside of just his incredible work in the ring, guy's only lost two fights in almost 30, or excuse me, almost 40. I think he's 37-2, something like that. Very impressive. But outside of that, man, a dude just with a crazy story, kind of that Disney story of not giving up, kind of having life give you a pretty crummy set of cards there for you, but making the most out of it, doing what you have to do. And, you know, he's a guy that after this conversation, you got to root for. He really is a dude that you got to root for. And in the spirit of full transparency, I'm a Canelo guy. I like Canelo, but my heart is going to be, it's going to be torn in May 4th when Daniel Jacobs gets in the ring and takes him on. Daniel Jacobs, good enough to give us a few minutes as he's walking around here. I wish you guys could see it, but as he's walking around Radio Row with the big title, with the belt, with the championship belt. So here it is, a couple minutes with the contender, the champ, the guy trying to knock off Canelo, Daniel, the golden child, the miracle man, Jacobs. And we're back here on Radio Row. And the one thing I love about the Super Bowl, I love a lot of things about the Super Bowl, but you get so many different people from so many different walks of life, sports, entertainment, music, the whole deal.
Yeah.
Everyone swings by to the Super Bowl. And now we are very pleased to welcome in Daniel Jacobs, the man who will be taking on Canelo on May 4th, right, in Las Vegas with an overall record of 35-2. And he was good enough and to give us a couple minutes of his time and bring this.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man, this thing's heavy. It's heavier than I thought, man.
Yeah, it got a little weight to it, for
sure. That's good, man.
Yeah.
So your fight coming up
a
couple months in Las Vegas. And we were for the Raiders, and we've been able to do a lot of really cool things. We've been to the Super Bowl. We've been to the NBA Finals, you know. Big-time college, all of us went to big-time college football programs. Done a lot of cool stuff. One thing that is on my sports bucket list that I have not done, I haven't been to a fight in Vegas.
Oh, well, I can for sure guarantee you that that will be an atmosphere that you would never forget.
I mean, what is it? What is a fight night in Vegas like?
It's a weekend. It's an event. It's not even the one fight. It's the actual event leading up to it, you know, doing different things before the weigh-ins. It's just a total vibe that as a fight fan you could truly appreciate being out in Vegas.
So one thing that I love about boxing is I love the nicknames, man. They're so good. They're so good. And as man who was given himself several nicknames, none of which have really stuck. I've really given it hell. I've really tried to get some self nicknames to stick. So the two that you roll with, the Golden Child.
Yeah.
A miracle man.
Yes, yes.
So let me ask you, can you give yourself a nickname, or does someone have to bestow it upon you?
I think it's one of those things where somebody has to kind of bestow it upon you and give it to you where you feel like it's deserving, because it's almost a cocky thing where you give your own self a nickname, you know?
Yeah.
My thing is, when I was the Golden Child, a friend of mine actually gave me that name because I was in the amateurs. He was like, man, you – that tournament that you just won, you were just so golden. I'm going to call you the Golden Child. And then I had that name for a long time. And then once I turned professional and I went through, obviously, my cancer scare, I thought it was deserving to give the fans an opportunity to rename me. So they chose the Miracle Man, and that's the name I'm sticking with.
I mean, speaking of the scare that you brought up, I mean, a crazy story. A story that is, you know, I'm sure they're going to turn it into a Disney movie one day.
Oh, I hope so.
You know what I mean? But, I mean, just – to go with you, to deal with what you went through, was there ever a moment when you were going through the treatment, trying to get back to 100%, where you kind of let that moment of doubt slip in a little bit? Like, I don't know if I can be back to the level that I once was.
Oh, 100%. I mean, you think about the things that I had to endure, learning how to walk again and, you know, having titanium rods be placed inside my back so that I can walk properly. All of these different things that I had to endure. I mean, it just was a lot. So obviously I had my points where I didn't know if I would be successful in my return, or I didn't know if I could even have a regular life. I mean, it was a very scary moment for me, but when my back was against the wall, I found a lot about myself. You know, I got a chance to see when all else fails, you have you and you control your mind, so you dictate your future. Because when I had the doctors tell me I can never box again, in the beginning I believed it, and I was depressed for a while until I adopted this mentality, this championship mentality, where you dictate your own life and you don't have anyone, especially, you know, a mere human, tell you exactly the outcome and landscape of your life.
What's the record been since you came back?
Definitely a lot to a little bit, but I think I've almost had maybe about almost 10 fights now since I've been back, and it's almost all knockouts. It's been really cool. It's been a good experience being back, and this is my happy place. You know, when I was in the hospital for months at a time, I remember just sitting in my wheelchair looking at people go to the bus stop. That was the highlight of my day. You know, just dreaming about having this moment, you know, being in the midst of my career, being a champion and being an entertainer. This is all that I dreamed of. And I have that opportunity now. You know, May 4th was the pinnacle of all opportunities. And, you know, I'm just truly blessed to have a position like this and to even just give it my all. And, you know, life not being promised as it was, being here is a gift in itself, you know.
You know, we talked about the Disney movie just offhand, but who's playing you in the Disney movie?
I think it can't be Will Smith now, so it might have to be his son or somebody, yeah. Right?
One thing that I love about boxing, variety of things I love, but one thing that I really get a kick out of is the weigh-in, right?
Oh yeah.
And the two guys, you know, fist to fist. But I always wonder, you guys are like, not just you, but just boxers across the board, they always seem so angry in the weigh-in. Is part of that just like kind of putting on for the TV cameras, or do you kind of have to go to a space in your mind where you're like, yo, I genuinely don't like this dude?
I think it's a mixture of both. But for me, it's all on my emotions at the time, because I remember my pro debut where I was unfamiliar to the whole standoff and face-off thing where at the weigh-ins the guys do that. So I was laughing when the guy was in my face. You know, it was funny to me because I wasn't used to it. But as you get more and more stiffer competition and guys who can actually stand a chance to beat you, you take it very serious. So it's really not hard to look at a guy who wants to take food off your table and put that switch on, you know, to eye him down, let him know your intentions, you know?
When you have that moment, are you a guy who talks a lot? Are you a chirper? Or do you kind of just, is it mano y mano, eyes locked in?
I kind of let you feel it through my eyes and especially through my actions.
Who do you think is the best chirper? Who do you think is a good talker?
Because,
I mean, dude, that's another great thing about boxers.
Oh, my
boxers
God.
Boxers kind of remind me of DBs, right? A little bit. Where DBs are always running their mouths, always talking, always running smack to the wide receivers.
Yeah.
I mean, I kind of see that in boxers, too. So who's like a good, like, all right, this dude can talk?
Man, I think the best talker we have right now in the game is Adrian Broner.
Really?
Yeah, he talks a good one. He'll have you believing that he can do so much, or that he's going to knock this guy out. And even though he's an extreme talent, you know, sometimes he doesn't always pull through. But great guy. I love Adrian.
What's the hardest fight that you've been in?
Hardest fight that I've been in a physical match would probably be Dmitry Pirog, my very first loss. Mm-hmm. Just being in a bad space in my mind, in my head. I just lost my grandmother that week, so I wasn't really the best as far as mental, so that might have been the best, hardest fight.
I think that boxing for me, and I'll tip my hand a little bit here, I'll embarrass myself ever so slightly. So you're not that, you're a couple years older than me, but you probably remember. You remember that TV show on MTV, Made? You remember that show?
Yeah,
where they used to take kids and like, I want to be a dancer, I want to be whatever. So I wanted to be a featherweight boxer. If I was going to get made, I want to be made in featherweight boxing.
That's so cool.
I don't think I'm like a featherweight weight anymore.
No,
like,
definitely not. Like, if you're a lightweight.
I'm a lightweight?
You're a lightweight.
So like at 175.
Are you 175 right now?
I mean, like, dripping wet, yeah. If I'm wearing that watch and that chain, I'm 175.
Well, 175 is my weight, man.
That's your weight? Oh, man. All right, we're going to have to for sure take the face-off picture out of this. Man, but, yeah, dude, I always – you know, I wanted to do the main thing, whatever, become a boxer. And I think the part of it, I was a kid, right?
Yeah.
And Rocky came out, you know, 20 years before I was born. But, dude, Rocky was such a game changer for everyone, right? Especially that first time you see it. Yeah, like, we were in high school. We actually had to watch Rocky in a in this like cinema class I took in high school, and I'd like seen like bits and pieces of it before. Uh-huh. But man, seeing Rocky and then the photo, like all the montages, uh-huh. and Rocky IV, and dude, oh man, I wanted that so bad. Yeah, that's what I wanted. I wanted to just go through like the training camp.
That's
the jump rope and all
that's
that.
That's pretty cool.
I mean, what is a camp like?
Camp is gruesome, man. Yeah. So everything that you see on the Rocky films is that and 10 times more. But nowadays with technology being at an all-time high, guys are starting to learn how to work smarter,
yeah.
opposed to taking just a traditional road where you get up and run 20 miles a day. You know, you might do things differently where it's less stress on the body. So I think I'm learning more of that now, how to kind of take more care of my body opposed to just torturing it and expect a good outcome, you know? So the key is to be smart and work smarter opposed to just having that Rocky mentality.
Now, the Rocky mentality is a pretty good mentality. Oh, Forget about it.
No, it's definitely one that gets you through anything in life. Right?
That's right. Yeah. I feel that. Daniel Jacobs, our guest here on Upon Further Review. And Daniel, I got to ask you before we get out of here. I know you've shared your story,
yeah.
an incredible story. We were joking that Will Smith's kids can play you one day. But you, I think what I really appreciate about you is that you're doing a lot of stuff to help other people that are in that situation.
Sure.
I mean, where did that kind of idea come from, and what are you really doing to kind of spread the word and awareness and make sure that other people don't have to deal with this that same kind of hardship?
Well, here's the thing. I mean, being a survivor means that I know full on exactly the ordeals cancer brings. So mentally, physically, financially, all across the board, cancer struck me and it struck hard. So I told myself that if I was ever in a position to give back and to help people in the same situations as me, that I would, and I would bring more awareness to it. So that's what we're doing with this Get in the Ring Foundation that we have. We have so many different events where we help so many different families and children battling this deadly disease. I mean, cancer is overwhelming how many people are dying daily from cancer, and it's just... For me to do my part and have a second chance, I just feel like it's such a blessing, you know?
Yeah, man, good on you. I mean, we talk, obviously, we work with the Raiders, and we see all the – I think there's such a misconception just in pro athletes in general where they see you guys perform in the ring or on Sundays with our guys, and they forget two things. They forget, one, he's just a dude, right?
Yeah.
You know, he's got to go home. He's got to have lunch.
Yeah.
And then the second thing is that I feel like there's – people don't realize all the great things – that pro athletes do off the field, and the things that people never know about, the things, you know, the autographs they sign for kids,
for
the people
sure.
they help out that they don't promote, and all that kind
of
stuff.
And one guy that kind of inspired me, who's a Hall of Famer Raider, is Tim Brown.
Really?
So I'm really cool friends with Tim Brown, and the idea of my foundation came from Tim Brown and his family. So we're really extremely close, and he's helping me kind of push my foundation as well. His sister is helping me run the foundation. So I'm really, really cool with the Browns, and we're like extreme Raiders fans, obviously, Raider Nation all day.
That's right.
And I love the game of football. So I'm just happy to be here. I live in Atlanta now. I'm just enjoying the festivities, the weekend. Man, it's going to be a great week.
Yeah, man, we're excited. Tim Brown's one of our favorites, and obviously – got to keep an eye out on you on May 4th
yes,
at the T-Mobile Arena in Las Vegas taking on Canelo. Daniel Jacobs, man, I appreciate your time, and I appreciate you bringing this beautiful belt over here. And hope you got another one in a couple months.
Indeed.
Appreciate you, bro.
Thank you, brother.
I could see Jaden Smith as a Daniel Jacobs. I could totally see it. And, man, what a story. What a nice guy. My man showed up iced out for the interview, too. Icy. The blinged out watch, the golden chain. A fitted suit. I was like, all right, man, this is what a boxer is supposed to look like. This is what a big time entertainer looks like. But it was a great conversation, man. And Daniel was good enough to let me take a picture with the belt. I'll tweet it out. He was a good dude, really good sport, all things considered. So big thank you to Daniel Jacobs, and big thank you to Akbar. And we're out of here. We got another day tomorrow. How could I forget? Before we get out of here, it's time for Trav's segment, a still unsponsored segment. Now in our second day of producing and haven't picked up a sponsor just yet, very hopeful, it's time for Trav's big takeaway. So, Travy, what did you take away from Wednesday here at Radio Row?
Well, nothing Super Bowl related, but
sure,
my takeaway is that you don't like beans.
Don't like them.
And that
don't
just
like
baffles me.
Don't like them. Can't stand with them. Won't stand with them. I was telling Trav, probably haven't had a bean in a burrito since – 04, 05? It's been some time.
And that's where I would say, why even have a burrito then?
No, that's a conversation for another day.
But yeah,
that's
my takeaway for today.
All right, I appreciate that. My takeaway today is that Michael Irvin and Marcus, our guy Marcus, have very similar styles. I tweeted out a photo of Michael Irvin next to Marcus looking eerily similar this afternoon. They literally have the exact same pair of sunglasses, the same facial expression. Said, who wore better, Michael Irvin or DeMarc?
Is that by design, the glasses, or is that just a coincidence?
I think it's a coincidence. I think for the sake of the bit, we're going to call it a coincidence. But who knows? You never know. But regardless, that's my big takeaway from today. And a big shout-out to Michael Irvin for wearing sunglasses indoors. You don't see that often in 2019.
And showing up late for the
photo.
Yes.
He was late for the NFL Network photo. Quick Brent back 30 seconds. The NFL Network analysts and all their talent had availability today. And so before their session, they all go up on the stage. Their boss has a few nice words about them. They have a photo op. Michael Irvin, obviously in the house, shows up late. Was late to his own photo, wearing the indoor shades, but gotta love him, man. Hall of Famer. Hall of Famer. Well, on that note, we're out of here. We're back tomorrow with another On Location episode. And we won't tip our hands yet again, but Marcus has booked us pretty solid tomorrow, and we're feeling strong to very strong about our lineup of guests. So we're excited. It'll be another good day on the grind. So for Eddie Pascal, producer Trav, engineer Jim, Akbar Bajabiamia, try saying that 10 times fast, and Daniel Jacobs, I'm Eddie Pascal. Thank you so much for hanging out with us, and we will catch you guys tomorrow on Upon Further Review.
Thanks for listening to this edition of Upon Further Review on the Raiders Podcast Network.